This podcast is sponsored by Hercules Strong Guard Tires. Visit HerculesTiresCommercial.com to learn more.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we begin a Monday back from the weekend. Gary, how are you?
I'm doing good. We got a lot to talk about today. The life of Bob Dole. Cuomo fired. What does it say about the media? The Senate GOP wants to try to stop the payout to illegal immigrants, or at least make Democrats vote on it. AOC and smash and grab. Huh? It's a hoax. It's not really happening.
No.
Out there.
No, yeah, it's a hoax.
I heard some of the retail outlets had some choice words for her. Mm. But I understand it. It makes sense. Mm-hmm. This is what the left did in the summer of 2020. There was no violence taking place.
Right.
They were peaceful protests.
Right.
So she believes it's worked before. Why not do it again?
Why not?
Illegal immigration stats and how they differ from 20 years ago. Really an interesting article that was done on that. The media freak out over Ron DeSantis.
Hmm.
I almost forgot about it because it was like Friday. But it was just so incredibly bizarre. And this is where he simply wants a state guard. And I believe about half the states, including California, have a state guard. And it's, you know, for emergencies.
Right.
And it's something that the governor himself, you know, can activate quicker than the National Guard. And it's people that are highly trained. And I think there'd be like 200 of them highly trained to go into areas during national disaster. Well, the left just went absolutely bonkers with it as if he was a dictator with his own paramilitary force.
Right.
I mean, it was just the most bizarre thing that you could possibly imagine. If you ever wanted to see the over-the-top, I mean, the bizarro world, over-the-top reaction from the left, you got it.
Well, you know, they used to at least be neutral when it came to anything relating to any level of military, right? And then, of course, we saw the defund the police. How soon before we get to defund the military and we the far left goes after them? Get rid of all military.
Well,
and we'll start with the
right.
State military. Anything that any governor, anything any Republican governor has control of.
Exactly. We need to get rid of. So, I mean, it was just the most over the top bizarre. Some of the allegations that were thrown out to the point where who was it that Sarah Silverman had to correct? She did it on social media. Was it Whoopi? I forgot who it was. But when Sarah Silverman comes out and says, you need to actually read this article.
Right.
And you need, you know, you've got to have some basis in truth here concerning it, which just blew my mind. But, you know, that's the second thing. Remember, she came out against all of the left going after the Israelis, saying, how come we never bring up Hamas?
Right. Right.
I mean, she's as an avowed liberal as you could ever get.
Oh, yeah. Very far left. She was dating Jimmy Kimmel at one time. That's how far left she is.
And so we'll get to latest polling. Friday's job numbers.
Oh, wow. Swing and a miss.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah, those.
Expectations were, 550?
Yeah, it was less than half of what they had expected.
Yeah, it come in just over 200. That's.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that's bad.
And so we will get to that and a whole bunch more. Something else just went through my mind, and I forgot where I was going with it. Okay, we'll figure it out sometime during the show.
Chris Cuomo's gone at CNN for good, fired over the weekend.
Yes.
And the death of Bob Dole.
Yeah, but, weekend. It's interesting. I met him once, and this was right after the Republican National Convention in 96.
Yeah, right.
And, I mean, like the, I forgot exactly, I think it was, it normally ends on a Thursday. So this would have been on Saturday, I believe. The first huge thing that he and Jack Kemp did, decided to hold their first big rally in Buffalo. Jack Kemp, if people don't remember, ran with Bob Dole as the vice president. Jack Kemp, quarterback for the last championship Buffalo Bills back in 64 and 65. And so I was asked, because the first thing was at University of Buffalo in the football stadium, to come in. And so I was asked to be the MC of it. So I got to meet Bob Dole at that time. And it was actually a great event in 96. But when you look at the history of Bob Dole, one of the things that really got to me yesterday is, remember the senator from Hawaii, Daniel Inouye, who died back, I think, in 2012. Mm-hmm. And he had lost an arm in World War II.
Yeah.
And we know the injuries that Bob Dole sustained in World War II, and the picture of both of them together, because they actually met recuperating. They right. actually met there, and there's a picture of a young Daniel Inouye and Bob Dole, you know, next to each other. And you can see, you know, it's Daniel Inouye. You can see, you know, his arm, because his arm had to be amputated. Mm-hmm. And so when he died in 2012, Bob Dole got off the wheelchair and said, he can't see me in a wheelchair. Basically, to go up and, you know, I'm not going to go up in a wheelchair to him. You're talking about, at that point, Dole's thinking, we're two warriors. I need to get out of this wheelchair. And that just got to me.
Yeah.
That got to me when I read that yesterday. I heard it before, but when I read it again yesterday, I just went, wow.
Yeah.
But, you know, what a, you think about it, what a, you know, what a career he had. Ran, you know, I forgot. I mean, I was so focused on 96, I forgot he ran for president three times.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I mean, 96 is kind of everybody's focus.
Right.
Bill Clinton's second term. There was a lot going on about how old Bob Dole was at the time. And he was 73 running in 96. And or he was, by the time the election rolled out, he turned 73 in the summer of 96. And you look at where we are today, and the Democrats had no problem with Joe Biden, although I wonder if they would do that again based on age or anything else. But Bob Dole held his own. I thought Dole Kemp was a strong ticket. I voted for them. I thought it was a strong ticket. The problem is that by that time, Bill Clinton had gained a lot of popularity, in part due to the class of 94, oddly enough. The Republicans actually helped to, I believe, give Bill Clinton that second win in 96. And Bob Dole was one of these guys that, you know, he just didn't have the same charisma. You had the people, I think Norm Macdonald did a Bob Dole on SNL a few times. But he didn't have that same charisma that Bill Clinton did. And that was that real beginning, I think, at least in the modern years, of where the left started creating a rock star. And you put Bill Clinton on stage on the Arsenio Hall show wearing sunglasses when he first ran. And then he rode that wave for a while. And 96, he was still a popular president. And Bob Dole wasn't going to be able to do that, even though, again, I think with Kemp on his ticket especially, it was a strong ticket.
Well,
it was just for, what, yeah. The timing just,
right.
You know, just wasn't right. And up against Bill Clinton and his popularity, and again, his popularity based in part on the class of 94, it really was tough to beat.
And you know,
impossible,
yeah,
to
when,
beat, really.
When I look back at that, and again, following Jack Kemp, because I've always said one of my economic and football heroes is the same person. the only one ever to bring the Bills a championship. And when Kemp was on the ticket, that really influenced me a lot because I thought, okay, wow, he is the one. People don't know this, but it's Kemp that was the one that convinced Reagan to cut taxes.
Right.
As much as as they did. Kemp, very supply side economics.
Mm-hmm.
And not for the massive spending that happened during that time,
right?
But for cutting taxes. So I was always impressed with Jack Kemp. And you think about it, even when Kemp was in football, he was always talking politics in the locker room.
Yeah,
even
right.
way back then. Mm-hmm. And so I was more impressed by it. But you had Clinton come out of the first term. I agree with you on that. Clinton came out of the first term. Had he cut welfare at that point? I can't remember if he had. If that's when
don't
the welfare.
Know, I don't know if he if they cut welfare by November right. of 96.
But he was viewed by that time still as a moderate.
Yes,
he was viewed by the American Independent as a moderate. Mm-hmm. And so if you're viewed as a moderate and you're doing okay with the help of the 94 Congress, which balanced the budget, which Clinton, you know, again, took credit for, people looked at it and said, why should we have a change?
Right.
It wasn't so much an anti-Bob Dole vote. We don't see the reason to change.
And really, the only argument against Bob Dole was his age at the time.
Yeah.
You know, which isn't an argument. And it is, he wasn't in a situation where he was behaving like the current president was as a candidate or is as a president. And so, but it didn't, you know, there's nothing that was going to break through with the media. There was nothing. And as you point out, people they're looking for change. They're looking, you know, if it's needed, if they see some kind of, you know, massive problem or set of problems like what we have now, and they believe we've definitely got to change direction, that's when they start looking at the other side. And 96 was not that. It just wasn't.
No, it wasn't.
You know, that also was kind of the beginning of the dot-com bubble. Not so much the bubble on the market, but the overinflation, overvaluation of what was going on the Internet, which was still brand new, and many homes didn't even have it. And so it was the rise of that, if you think about it, and the beginning of that. Was it a real expansion of wealth? Not really, but this perceived expansion of wealth. And as you mentioned, the class of 94 coming in and getting our fiscal house in order, well, everything's working.
Okay, yeah, because, all right, I did have it correct because I thought the welfare reform was passed close to when the election was held, and it was August 22nd. So
okay.
you had a balanced budget coming in. You had welfare reform. Even though it wasn't great welfare reform, you had Clinton sign the bill into law to great fanfare. I remember Jesse Jackson coming out furious because this was right around the convention time for the Democrats.
Right, right.
And so he was furious that Clinton had signed that, but Clinton said, you know, that's balance the budget. Welfare reform, this gets me elected. And I believe it did.
I think it did, too.
Yeah. Because he was perceived by independents as a moderate, even if he was forced by a Republican Congress to become the moderate. He took that to great fanfare and said, see, I'm getting things done.
Yeah. And there hadn't been, I mean, if you look, my gosh, by comparison, I don't know. I don't even know if you can compare the first term of Bill Clinton to Joe Biden. I don't know.
No,
I don't know. I don't know if you can compare anybody.
No, the only thing
here's what I would say. As a Democrat, it would be a successful first term and again with help from the Republicans in the class of 94. Politically, it would be a successful first term as opposed to a god-awful first term, and we're only 10 months in.
Yeah, if memory serves me right, the one mistake that Clinton made coming in is, remember, the Democrats passed the luxury tax, the yacht tax.
Yeah,
right. And then the yacht business started going down, and they quickly reversed course on that, though.
Yeah, was that within a year? Did they turn around on that?
It was very quickly.
Yeah,
it was extremely.
Yeah,
yeah, and so he seemed to recognize, okay, this is a mistake here, because we can focus and say Americans are losing jobs.
Right,
jobs. Biden comes in and cuts the Keystone Pipeline, thousands of great union jobs lost, and even though by the Democrat standard of climate change, it does the opposite. It doesn't matter.
And
it doesn't matter.
Three of his cabinet members were talking about how in days after, the pipelines are the most efficient way to move oil.
Not only efficient, but it's the most friendly climate change way to do so.
Right. Yeah. Efficient in all those terms.
And so but this guy, it doesn't matter. He just does something. He's Izzy Mandelbaum.
Mm-hmm.
We got a great show ahead. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So, Chris Cuomo, fired from CNN.
Gone.
You and I both said we didn't see about a week ago how he could survive this, as much as we couldn't believe how he had survived everything already.
Yeah.
That had... just, again, it's very tough to taint CNN, but still showed the public that they're not journalists. And you and I have talked about how just disgusting it was that him and his brother on the Laugh Fest that they had for months.
Mm-hmm.
And this was after we knew about the senior citizens being ordered into nursing homes, those that had COVID. And we knew about that at that particular time. But we got new information, or CNN got new information, or the investigative group, the law firm that did it. This is when a sexual harassment charge came in against Chris Cuomo.
Right.
And apparently from, ABC and old ABC colleague?
Right.
It's just, and you're just like, wow, but both gone. Think about that. Both gone.
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal, but not surprising if you were following along.
No, and we'll get to more of it coming up.
Here's your forecast.
An area of severe thunderstorms moving through this morning in Arkansas through the Ohio and Tennessee valleys, southern Illinois, and western Kentucky. These storms will be moving to the east throughout the morning, and with them frequent lightning, high winds, and potential for a few tornadoes. Plus, with the heavy amount of rain, we could see some areas of flash flooding. Rain is expected from this system today from Maine into eastern Texas. Now, out ahead of this storm, the temperatures will be 10 to 20 degrees above average over parts of the East Coast today. Meantime, temperatures are falling with heavy snow and high winds for the upper Great Lakes into Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Michigan. Fargo and Grand Forks are under a blizzard warning. Winds could be gusting as high as 50 miles an hour there, and of course, with the snow, whiteout conditions. Mountainous areas of Idaho and Montana are set to pick up several inches of snow today. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
lazy, and prone to long lunches. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE, if you'd like to get in. Just reading here from the New York Post here. Andrew Cuomo's top aide pulled a downright dirty and possibly illegal trick to try and impugn one of then-governor's sexual harassment accusers. The New York Post has learned Cuomo's right-hand aide, Melissa DeRosa, recruited a top MTA official as a spy to secretly record a phone conversation with an ex-executive staffer identified as Caitlin, who subsequently became one of the governor's accusers. The ploy is revealed in transcripts of the state attorney general's probe of Cuomo and confirmed to sources by the Post.
Wow.
The secret recording is shocking, and we do believe it was illegal, said Caitlin's lawyer. Caitlin, employed in another state agency after working in the executive chamber, had tweeted in support of Boylan at the time DeRosa set Collins on her. The details were laid out in the thousands of pages of documents and transcripts of the interviews released this week by James's office evidence, which also triggered CNN's suspension of anchor Chris Cuomo for his role in using journalistic assets to try and aid his brother. You know, when I saw, when I read Chris Cuomo's response to getting fired, you know, and I've laid it out before, you know, basically helping family, I'm like, stop it already. I think he believes he's a victim.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. It started with that, you know, that's the way it's going to be, and I'm always going to put my family first, and so I'm going to stay here at this job and continue to ignore one of the biggest stories, and which was blatant, not just Chris Cuomo telling their viewers that the news doesn't matter and that the product doesn't matter, but it was CNN telling them that we're going to go a whole hour every night without covering it. We're going to do prime time. Wasn't his show called Prime Time? No, it was at Don Lemon's show. But you've got prime time CNN. I mean, he had tens and tens of viewers every night. And yet, he didn't want to do the job. And as we said, great, then make the choice to step aside. Or CNN should make the choice to suspend him and say, until this thing goes away, he's not going to be on the air. They didn't do that. And so now it's about, with both of them, getting caught. You know, this didn't happen out of the goodness of their own hearts. They didn't just go, you know what? I did something really horrible. Neither of them did that. They essentially were forced out. Chris fired. Andrew pretty much forced to go. There was no way he could stay. But only after he got caught. These people are not, you know, they don't believe they did anything wrong. I believe Andrew doesn't believe he did anything wrong. I think he believes he's a victim.
Yeah, I think both the Cuomo brothers believe that they are victims.
Right.
Oh, yes, and we did. Thank you so much for making sure that both Eric and I got plenty of the pictures of Fredo in the rowboat.
Yeah.
Over the weekend. But a woman who lodged a sexual harassment allegation against former CNN anchor Chris Cuomo was disgusted by what she saw as his hypocrisy and attempts to discredit women who made similar allegations against his brother, her lawyer said on Sunday. The woman's complaint became known shortly after CNN fired the Cuomo Primetime. That was the name of it, Cuomo Primetime anchor on Saturday. Chris Cuomo had been criticized for breaching journalistic ethics by trying to help his brother, former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, beat his own harassment charges. A woman who has chosen to remain anonymous took her allegations against Chris Cuomo to CNN on Wednesday through her lawyer, Deborah Katz. So that was really the final nail in the coffin for him.
Right.
Katz did not give any specifics about the alleged behavior believed to have occurred before Cuomo joined CNN in 2013. Prior to that, he worked at ABC News. Chris Cuomo, through a spokesperson, said the charges were untrue. If the goal in making these false and unvetted accusations was to see Mr. Cuomo punished by CNN, that may explain his unwarranted termination, the spokesman said.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't believe he did anything wrong.
Exactly. He's the victim.
Now, you and I said before this sexual harassment allegation, it didn't matter. Well, actually, I would have fired him when we realized that he didn't even understand the First Amendment.
Yeah, I got hammered on social media one day for about, 12, 14 hours?
Oh, he just got pounded on it because he was stating that the First Amendment doesn't protect hate crimes.
Yeah, like, hate speech.
Yeah, but what I say, hate speech. Thank mm-hmm. you very much, not hate crimes.
Right.
Hate speech. And it's like, well, yeah, it does. Who was the guest?
I forgot.
I thought there was a guest on there who said, well, Chris, it does. No, it doesn't. Yes, it does. But we said at that point, if you actually are that ignorant and on CNN and you're a lawyer
mm-hmm.
and you don't know that, you don't understand what the First Amendment is about. Sorry, you got to go. But we had said earlier that, number one, there is no way. We knew what happened in the nursing homes and he ignored the story. CNN ignored the story.
Mm-hmm.
And brought him on, and part of the marketing for him, I believe, to sell the book.
Oh yeah,
was to have these frequent, I don't know what you call them,
variety shows.
Okay, a variety. All right, a variety show with his brother, who at that time was the governor of New York, and it really was just the most disgusting thing you could possibly imagine.
Yeah,
making him seem like some sort of incredible, almost deity. Completely what we need in this country as a leader, and for somebody to lead us through COVID, knowing the executive order that he had put out on the nursing homes.
Mm-hmm.
But the lawyer said in Sunday's statement that her client was motivated by Cuomo's statements regarding allegations against his brother, that he cared deeply and profoundly about the issues of sexual misconduct. The woman also believed that Cuomo played an active role in attempting to smear a woman who had accused his brother. Hearing the hypocrisy of Chris Cuomo's on-air words and disgusted by his efforts to try to discredit these women, my client retained counsel to report the serious sexual misconduct to CNN.
Hmm.
The new misconduct allegation comes after a veteran TV executive, Shelley Ross, wrote a column for the New York Times in September saying Chris Cuomo had groped her at a party 16 years ago when they both worked for ABC News. Cuomo told the newspaper, "I apologized to her then, and I meant it." In response to the criticism of his actions regarding his brother, Cuomo said that he was simply trying to help him, telling his CNN audience shortly after Andrew Cuomo resigned in August, it's never easy being in this business and coming from a political family. I never attack nor encourage anyone to attack any woman who came forward. Cuomo said, I never made calls to the press about my brother's situation. However, in an email from last March, newly released by the New York Attorney General, Cuomo told one of his brother's aides, I have a lead on the wedding girl. It was in reference to a woman who said in news reports she was uncomfortable about how the governor touched her when they met at a wedding. Well, that was the entire point. He lied to his audience.
Right. And I would have to believe that family comes first would justify that lie for him.
Yeah. Well, look, family comes first. I agree.
Go be a lawyer for your brother then.
Right. Exactly.
You can't do both.
So even before the sexual harassment allegation came up, well, again, our standards would have been different. We would have fired him for not understanding what the First Amendment is about.
Yeah. Well, and it would be, if Eric and Gary were running CNN, there would be a lot of change.
First off,
you know those
sign us for $2 million each.
You know those unemployment numbers from Friday? Yeah, it'd be a little worse.
Red Eye Primetime.
So, see, you have experience here in cable news. Uh-huh. We've seen a lot of folks from cable news recently. It is, though, you know, again, the bigger problem isn't Chris Cuomo in terms of the media. The bigger problem is that management knew about a number of things. I can't tell you exactly how much they knew about his lies and when. But this is a network that, along with other liberal media, carried the Russian hoax and still carries it today.
Yeah.
The Charlottesville lie.
Yep.
They carry it on and they still carry it today. I mean, imagine back in the day if they had taken a quote from Barack Obama out of context. Now, that would be almost impossible, as they used to play pretty much everything that he said. So taking it out of context would be impossible. But imagine that they did that to the extent that they made him look like a bigot. The apologies and the firings would have been over the top. Somebody would have gotten fired over that. But nope, the Charlottesville lie continues today, as does the Russian hoax. So Chris Cuomo's gone, but whoever's going to be there is going to be, that person's going to behave the same way management allows them to behave on other shows. That's just the way it is. You know, the idea that someone in the liberal media lied and got fired for it is kind of refreshing. But, man, it's just not even a start. It's not even a good start.
No.
And by the way, you and I aren't the ones that say, hey, these people should be fired. We're the ones that believe that journalism should exist, and it doesn't. But we know these are activists. They're not journalists. And so I've given up hope that we're ever going to see true journalism again on cable news to any real extent. So I'm parked firmly in reality and not this grand idea that we can replace them and should replace them all with real journalists. Because, I don't know where you would get that many journalists today. I don't know you could populate one channel, much less all the liberal media.
They don't exist.
They don't.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. The other thing I liked over the weekend was Ron Klain, Biden's chief of staff, stating that the press is horrible with Biden, and then Dana Milbank of the Washington Post trying to make the case that it's even worse than it was for Trump. The media treats Biden as badly and or worse than Trump. Here's the proof. Well, the proof isn't there because nobody has lied about Biden for 4 years straight, as the Democrats did about Trump
right.
and Russia collusion.
Right.
Nobody lied, or no one lied and or didn't do their job and kept repeating the same lies without investigating them, because we know, because we covered it every single day. And well, we know, we constantly said, where is the evidence? Where is the evidence? Where is the evidence? The media did not do that.
No. And, you know, this is, again, you and I talked about it recently. I think both on and off the air, all the major things against Trump, all the major things against Trump were all made up. They were all lies. And we went through it. The things that affected his polling numbers. Now, look, we were the first to, you know, mention anything when he was off on messaging. And I think on tariffs, you and I, you know, said, look, you can't make, when it came to steel tariffs, you can't make policy on the fly, right? But on the major items against Trump, the liberals had to make it up. Tell me what's being made up against Joe Biden on all the things that he himself has created.
This hour's news is brought to you by Travel Centers of America, home of World Lens Coffee, the freshest roast on the road.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the entire world, we are Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. Download our Red Eye Radio app, and you can listen at your convenience. I saw this story, and you said this a long, 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 long time ago. It reminded me immediately of you in the comment when the whole concept of legalization of marijuana was coming out there, and they're saying, no, you legalize it, tax the daylights out of it. And you said, no. Don't tax the daylights out of it. If you tax the daylights out of it, you'll still keep the drug dealers in business.
Yeah, there will be. If you tax it and raise the essentially the market price for it, then the competition, the black market, will still be in play. And so the cartels, in fact, I just read a story about 2 weeks ago where the cartels are promoting right now. They're promoting their sales are heavy. They're I don't know if they have a show on CNBC or where they promote that. That's how they phrased it in the article. But they're saying that their marijuana sales are huge. Now, I don't know if that means weed itself or any of the edibles or what they're dealing in these days, but they're competing with legitimate sellers in the States. And they knew it. You underbid anybody, and, you know, you hope to gain that business, and that's exactly what's going on in states where it's legal.
Because we had said the only way you're going to do it is if you have, in the private sector, if you're going to legalize pot, that you have a lot of competition.
Right.
If you make it more of a private sector monopoly where licenses are few and far between, and you tax the daylights out of it, you're not going to do anything to accomplish the illegal drug trade.
Right.
Well, they found that out in San Francisco. Mm. An ordinance suspending San Francisco's cannabis business tax was unanimously approved by city supervisors. City supervisors unanimously in San Francisco approved a tax cut. Why?
Man, I wonder if we go back how many tax cuts they've approved in San Francisco.
In a statement suspending the tax, they said it will help support legal cannabis retailers as the legal cannabis retailers struggle to compete with illegal cannabis sellers. See, you get government in there to say, we're going to legalize it. We're going to tax the daylights out of it. And we're going to put everybody out of all the illegal people out of business. We went, no, you're not. You're the government. You don't do anything right.
Yep. The cost of government with everything, but including here, we said it for years. That movement, legalize it and tax it. No, legalize it and be done with it. Tax it like any other item, but don't put some special tax on it that has the the price going through the roof. Otherwise, you're going to have the black market in play.
The San Francisco supervisor, Raphael Mandelman, wow, I almost said Mandelbaum, said in a statement published by the San Francisco Examiner, sadly, the illegal market is flourishing by undercutting the prices of legal businesses, which is bad for our economy, as illegal businesses pay no taxes while subjecting workers to dangerous conditions and consumers to dangerous products. Now is not the time to impose a new tax on small businesses that are just getting established and trying to compete with the illicit operators. It's exactly what you said. I'll never forget the calls, because that was really one of the major pushes from the left was, no, if you don't want to legalize it, first off, if you legalize it, you're going to get rid of the illegal drug trade. And we said, not if you tax the daylights out of it, you're not going to. And you said it over, I remember people wanting to, you know, fight with you all the time on the air. No, we can tax it, we can tax it. You went, no, we can tax it.
No.
Because it's going to come back and it's going to haunt you, because government's going to keep saying, oh, okay, this problem, okay, vice tax, vice tax, vice tax, vice tax,
yep,
vice tax. Well, eventually, when you keep taxing the vices, the illegal vices,
right,
are going to be able to compete better.
Yep. And that's exactly what's going on. And it was only a matter of time. Makes me wonder if other areas and states might even look to lower their taxes on it, but who knows?
Now they're just suspending it.
Right. It is temporary, right? It is
for a year.
Yeah. I thought it was. Okay.
Yeah. The tax itself was approved by voters in 2008 and imposed a 1-5% tax on gross receipts from cannabis sales.
But
the new ordinance suspends the business tax through December 31st, 2022.
But then what? You're going to impose it for what reason? You just gave all the reason not to put this tax in place. And that's not going to be the case a year from now. Of course it will be. And you'll have legal cannabis businesses are going to be complaining just like they are now. And they're going to be hurting like they are now. So, look, if you want to create an industry, states and locales can decide what they want, for sale, and they did. In a number of states already. But the proponents of legalization, many of them had it wrong to begin with. You know, look at all the things we can solve by taxing it. No. No. You put a sales tax that's the same sales tax on any other item based on the tax rate, the sales tax rate, if there is a sales tax. Otherwise, leave it. It's either legal or it's not. You know, coming in and saying, well, it has this and these qualities and it promotes this kind of behavior, and nope, it's either legal or it's not.
Well, the claims got to be absurd that we can take care of all of our social ills by legalizing drugs.
Oh, my gosh.
And we went, no, we're not. Stop it.
Yeah. No, we're close.
Stop doing what government always does, which is, okay, let's project here. We're going to project the taxes we're going to collect over the next 10 years. Well, they always overestimate.
Yeah, right.
When do they ever underestimate?
Right.
Very rare.
Right. And it's, you know, when that promise was put out there, and I don't know who the first was to float that promise, but it stayed in play for a long, long time. I mean, it was we'll call it a meme approach now, but back in the day it was a bumper sticker, right? Or a T-shirt. Legalize it and tax it. No, legalize it. And quit giving the government and local governments the ideas. No. And, you know, but they create an industry here and then go after the industry right away with a special tax and keep adding taxes onto it and then expect that industry is going to be able to survive. because the industry has to pass it along to their consumers, and the consumers make a choice based on where they can get the weed cheaper, quite frankly. And that's what they do. That's what happens inevitably. If people can get, because here's the mentality after legalization for a lot of people. A lot of people, it's, well, I don't need to prove that I bought it legally. If they legalized it, then authorities really don't care if I smoke it, which means they really don't care where I bought it. That's the attitude. For many people, that's the attitude.
Yeah, you're right.
It's socially acceptable, now legally acceptable, and what are they going to do? Well, I can buy it much cheaper across the street than I can over at the local business that's having to charge me taxes and everything else. And that's exactly what's happened. There are plenty of people out there that wouldn't have smoked it if it didn't become legal, and insist on going through the legal process because they don't want to get busted. They fear the legal system for one reason or another, and they will abide by the law. But their behavior will change as the price goes up. There's no doubt. And so you create an industry, and then you punish it by taxing them in a special way, in a unique way. That's not the way.
It was never going to raise the money that the proponents were trying to sell the public on.
No.
And we had stated this from the very, very beginning. It wasn't going to do it. We got in some interesting discussions and outright arguments on it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but we did.
But we were correct. It didn't. It's not raising enough money to solve all the social ills out there.
Right.
It's raising, a little bit of money. But as you can see, for example, in San Francisco, it has caused problems. And you're just talking about a 1% to 5% tax. Think about that. Just a 1%, 1% to 5% gross, receipts tax on it, which isn't 30% or 40%. Remember, people were talking about that. You could tax it 25, 30%. We went, you're crazy.
Yeah.
You can't do it. No. You'll be undercut by the illegal drug growers out there and sellers. And it's exactly what they're seeing in San Francisco. I'm guessing part of the problem is that because you've legalized it, and it'll be interesting to see what's going to be in 10 years when it becomes normal.
Right.
Because still, it isn't as normal as alcohol.
Right.
And there are many states, like we've, and people laugh when we say it, but in the state of Texas, for example, where we are, it was just in the past year where the town I lived in legalized alcohol. When we go to the dispensary here, it's an alcohol dispensary.
Well, I
because
mean,
there is no,
yeah.
Nobody's even, and it was talked about in the state legislature, but in there is no serious push in the state of Texas for it. And so it still isn't viewed as normal. Will it be in 10 years, 50? Will it be normalized by the time that we have all electric vehicles?
Hmm. There's been talk, in fact, pushed by Republicans on the state level here in Texas to decriminalize it down to a certain level, which would mean that there would be a fine or a penalty, but the local police wouldn't be burdened with taking you to jail and putting you behind bars and processing if it were a small amount. But even that hasn't gotten off the ground. In the past two or three legislative sessions, we have a part-time legislation here in Texas, but that hasn't gotten off the ground just yet. And I don't know if it will. But that was about being able to keep jails open, keep space in local jails especially.
Right.
That, and again, it would still be against the law. It wasn't legalization by any means.
Yeah, but but even the argument in Texas, you don't hear it as you might have 20 years ago, which is we need to legalize it and tax it.
Yeah, no, I don't hear that.
You may hear people saying legalize it, but you don't hear the argument and tax it, and therefore we can take care of all societal ills.
Right.
Like, no, you're not.
No, it doesn't work that way. Nope. Look, if you expand wealth, if there's a new industry that comes about and you're taxing based on, again, the local sales tax rate, which would be comparable with any other product that's being sold, where there is a local sales tax, then fine. If you're expanding that that revenue in any way, all right, that's a positive. Is it going to pay for all the things that they were making the claims for? Well, no. And should we tax it 25 or 30%? No, absolutely not. Because then you could start applying that anywhere and everywhere. But I'm with you on the social aspect. It still is not what alcohol is. You can watch some major TV shows right now, and you will see in a number of them where there is alcohol is present throughout each episode. And you don't even have to go back to Mad Men where they would sleep in the office and wake up at 6 a.m. and the first thing they would do is pour a drink. No, you can watch a number of shows where there is a ton of alcohol. You know, a lot of the streaming shows right now, especially there, it's just accepted. You know, they'll sit down at lunch, they'll have a beer or whatever. And throughout the show, people are sipping on alcohol. To me, it's kind of interesting because I wonder how many people actually drink that much, but it's there nonetheless.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on work zones. Keep your cool. There's a motorcycle driving on the shoulder to bypass construction traffic. And another driver just cut you off because he waited until the last minute to merge out of a closed lane. Even though these situations are incredibly frustrating, it's up to you as a professional to keep your cool when driving in a work zone. Try to give others the benefit of the doubt. Maybe that driver who cut you off didn't realize that the lane was ending, or really didn't have an opportunity to merge sooner. Maybe the motorcyclist thinks he's helping everyone by getting out of the way and not further contributing to traffic. Even when there's no good reason for another driver's bad behavior, though, it's crucial that you don't lose your patience or try to retaliate. If you feel yourself getting angry, try counting to 10, singing a favorite song, or pulling off the road to take a short break. Remember that having patience in the moment will help you reach your destination safely. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This report is brought to you by National Truck Protection and Premium 2000 Plus, the number one selling aftermarket truck warranties in North America, available at thousands of used truck dealers everywhere.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, Walgreens and other retail organizations fire back at AOC. There's a headline for dismissing the growing problem of organized retail theft, saying these aren't panning out. It's a hoax.
Yeah.
Just right. Amazing. We'll get to that. Plus, White House chief of staff complaining that President Biden is not getting fair media coverage after a Washington Post article, Dana Milbank saying this could threaten our democracy, the coverage that Biden is getting. This is the most bizarre thing ever. It's like,
you know,
it's worse than Trump. He's getting worse coverage than Trump.
Uh-huh. Well,
Boy, there's so much to cover here.
Well, again, I mean, if you take all the lies out of it, if the liberal media had corrected those lies or not engaged in those lies, how much negative would be out there about Trump? There would be. There's always negative about a president. There's no doubt. And if you look at Biden, all the negative media, tell me what isn't earned. Tell me what is unfair that he gets from the liberal media, especially. That isn't fair.
There are two points here. One, the fact the media is ticked off that he won't talk to them.
Oh, yeah. He slighted them.
Right.
Yeah.
Trump talks too much.
Right.
Trump would talk to anybody at any time, anywhere. Biden won't talk to the media. And the fact is, the media believes that Biden is dragging down the left and the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Yep.
There's a specific reason that he is getting negative press. First off, the things that he are doing are obvious lies that are almost impossible to defend.
Yep. Over and over again. So, yeah, have they, as the liberal media, are they losing their use for him?
Yep.
Polling better than Biden. Eric and Gary on Red Eye Radio.
And hey, Sarah Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye.
Yeah.
I just, you know, the Dana Milbank article is just a joke, and Ron Klain, the president's chief of staff, promoting the fact that Biden isn't getting fair coverage, that it's too negative. President Biden's top aide, this from the New York Post, took to Twitter Saturday to decry press coverage of his boss. The chief of staff, known to insiders as the prime minister for his outsized influence inside the White House, shared an opinion essay from the Washington Post arguing that Biden was receiving worse coverage than former President Trump. The piece from post-opinion columnist Anna Milbank warned, quote, that my colleagues in the media are serving as accessories to the murder of democracy. Because of their negative coverage of Biden. Milbank says he came to the conclusion after an analysis of more than 200,000 articles from 65 news organizations by the information company Fiscal Note. We need a skeptical independent press, but how about being partisans for democracy? The country is in a struggle between self-governance and an authoritarian alternative, Milbank carped. Klain agreed. Submitted for your consideration, he said, linking to the piece. During his 4 years in office, Trump was subjected to withering and relentless press coverage, which included a years-long inquiry into unsubstantiated allegations of collusion with Russia. During the 2020 presidential campaign, unflattering news about Biden, specifically relating to his business dealings with son Hunter, was actively suppressed by journalists and social media platforms and falsely labeled by Biden aides and supporters as Russia disinformation. GOP strategist Luke Thompson told the Post, only an idiot or a journalist would find this persuasive. Look, I do agree. It is shocking the negative media coverage of a Democrat president that you see and his administration. Look at the Washington Post. The article that was out over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Vice President Kamala Harris is described as a bully in a new report that brands her as a common denominator behind a recent exodus of high-level staffers. Harris's allegedly soul-destroying management style was revealed by staffers to the Washington Post just days after the spokesperson and longtime aide, Simone Sanders, announced her departure.
Remember when Obama was first elected, the late-night comedians wouldn't tell a joke about him? They just went on telling Bush jokes for over a year.
And yeah.
They said, well, because there's nothing here, nothing funny here. So now you've got this, them writing, the liberal media going after Kamala Harris. It was some pretty strong words for the liberal media, for anyone.
But it's It's not hard to understand.
No.
No. Now, I'm sure somebody will do an analysis of Dana Milbank's article to find out, you know, because you have, for example, you'll have Newsbusters that does it on a consistent basis. Mm-hmm. We'll see, you know, what it comes out. But as to the criticism of the media, the big criticism, the major criticism of Trump that tanked him in the ratings, in the polling, the rankings.
Yeah, as presidents go right now, he's dead last. And but, as current presidents go,
but when you see it, it's because we have said the big things about Trump, which was collusion, which is right after the Mueller report, when he had his lowest polling numbers, all based on a lie.
Yeah.
And then his other polling numbers, that real low polling numbers, came out after Charlottesville, again, based on a lie.
Right.
The problem with Biden, and the reason the media can't find a way, how is the media going to promote the ridiculous things that he says and the lies that he puts out? Tell me another president that has pulled us out of a war the way that Biden did, that cost the lives of 13 U.S. service persons and left Americans behind enemy terrorist lines and lied to the American people straight up about what every top general told him. Tell me the last time that happened. Tell me the last time it was so obvious that the president created the problem on the border that he will not solve and blames everybody else. The public didn't buy into it. The press may be political activists, but they're not stupid. They saw that the public didn't buy into it. They saw that the public didn't buy in. They're looking at this going, my God, you have a Democratic president who has helped to give out trillions of dollars to the American public and spending, and he can't sell it because of inflation. When you have a president suggesting that inflation is helpful, when you have a president suggesting that spending a tremendous amount of taxpayer dollars cost nothing, the media looks at it and they look at the polling and they say, my God, this guy's just tanking big time. The media is negative against the president because he is no longer of any use to them. His only use was not to be an effective president. His use was simply to defeat Donald Trump. Remember, he was not viewed as a candidate that the Democrats wanted until South Carolina came along.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. Then there was this whole thing, we need to win. We can't win with these other people. Kamala Harris is getting all this negative press because they no longer have any use for her.
Yeah, it's that simple. And we asked the question, as it was coming together and it appeared last year that Biden was going to be the nominee, we asked the question to the Democrat rank and file, then what? What is he actually promising? We know the agenda items, but we're talking about outside of punishing companies. What is he offering that's going to be beneficial to people, all people? There wasn't one thing. Nothing. Because they don't want the expansion of wealth. They don't want the economy to boom. So what are they offering? And now we're getting more and more, especially in the last few months, but really over the 10 months plus. You got nothing. That's the whole idea. Many people voted out of their hatred for Trump. They didn't vote for Joe Biden.
The far left, which I believe makes up the far left makes up the majority of the media out there, actually agree with a lot of the stuff Biden does.
Mm-hmm.
But they realize he can't sell it.
Yes.
They need somebody
who can
sell it.
Yes, that's the other part of it. Yes.
Harris can't sell it.
No.
He can't sell it. They believe that they're completely incompetent in communications, and the fact is they're frustrated because they see the polling numbers, the mainstream media, the political activists in the mainstream media, they see the polling numbers. They believe Democrats are going to get crushed. And so if Biden is still talking about running and Harris is still by his side, they want both of them gone.
Yeah.
They view them as worthless.
Yeah, I believe
they
so.
They cannot help with their cause, and the polling shows it all. I mean, yeah. I just looked at the Civics polling again, and the president, remember, got a little bit of a bump over Thanksgiving, right back down. Mm-hmm. Was it 17 points now on the Civics poll?
Yeah.
Underwater in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mm-hmm. these are numbers, and when you see how fast his numbers have dropped, there is no president that touches how far he has dropped, not even Trump.
No.
Of that came out last week.
Right.
The actual drop from the beginning of the presidency to 9 months in.
Right.
Nobody touches Biden on it, and nothing is getting better. So if you wonder why the media is doing it, it's because they don't view him as competent, and they know that they can't sell to the American public that what he is doing is the right thing. The media doesn't believe that they can sell it.
Right.
So there's only one course, and that's to do everything you can to ensure that somebody else runs for president in 2024,
yep.
except Biden and Harris.
Yep.
You know, that's some of the accolades, you know, for Buttigieg, even though he's clueless. It doesn't matter. We just need somebody else.
Well, and the question is, how do you make that happen without the implosion of the party altogether? Because if you're saying the people at the top of the party, the two at the very top of the party, aren't good enough, how do you make that happen?
Who represents the party?
I don't know any one person that does.
Well, who's still getting the most publicity? AOC.
AOC.
You see, you know, Tlaib over the weekend. Oh, my mm-hmm. God, did you see her
mm-hmm.
talking about the fact of all of the debt that she's racked up?
Yeah.
And she's an example of why they should not forgive, but transfer the responsibility of her student loans to somebody else.
Right.
Oh, God. She just got blasted.
Yeah, she's going to get no sympathy on that one. But no, you're right. AOC, we'll see to what extent Stacey Abrams, right? But we won't know until Election Day for her. But is that the move? And is it the, because we look at that, again, that 18 to 34 demographic where the president has lost them and he's lost independents. The difference would be is that if they were to bring two candidates in, president and vice president, to the top of the ticket, whoever it would be, but assume that they're far left, appeal to the young. They won't appeal to the independent. And that'll be the problem. When running for president, if you can't win the independents, you're not going to win. You need them to get to the White House. And I don't see that happening with people who are radical right now. They may re-energize the 18 to 34, but the independents, you're not going to, because it's the same agenda.
Here it is, salon.com, liberal publication. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden's Christmas reboot, a tightly wound presidency badly needs some holiday cheer. Here's my Christmas gift, Mr. President. Open the White House doors and talk to the media, or at least to me. and then it says, here's what probably is on Ron Klain's desk. Stay on point. Keep POTUS moving in quick, short bursts. Limit press access. Don't engage the crazies. And I'm basically saying, that's not working.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't, honestly, there's not a fix. There's not a fix for Joe Biden because you can't change the person that he is. And the more the left media, the activists in the liberal media, the more that they reject him, the more he's going to fight back. He's going to complain. He's not going to change who he is That's never going to happen. And good luck changing and insisting that someone else run in 2024 without it just completely imploding.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up following the top of the hour, Walgreens goes after AOC for dismissing the growing problem of organized retail looting.
Yeah.
Really interesting what happened there over the weekend. And the more I read the Salon.com story, it's just amazing. I mean, it's everything that we have said. Mm-hmm. When we're guessing what's going on in the Biden administration, it's exactly what's going on in the Biden administration.
Yep. Yeah.
Behind the scenes,
right,
trying to keep Biden out of the public, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. exactly what we have said over the last couple of weeks when we said, okay, they've got him out more in front of the public. They believe that will raise his sagging poll numbers.
Right.
Don't let him speak to anybody, but every day be out there making statements. When we said it was happening, it's exactly what was going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
According to this article. So we will get to that and more, plus your calls and comments if you want to get in. We would love to hear from you. 866-90-RED-EYE is the number to punch in.
Yeah.
And chat.
Or put us on speed dial. Do they still have speed dial?
Last I saw, that was a Seinfeld episode.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Download our Red Eye Radio app and listen when you want. All right, our Omicron update. A couple of stories over the weekend. This from Stat News, and the South African Medical Research Council posted a report Saturday on the early experiences at several hospitals where Omicron was first spotted in the country. Most hospitalized patients who tested positive for the new variant did not need supplemental oxygen. Few developed COVID pneumonia. Few required high-level care. Fewer still were admitted into intensive care. Experts caution that reading too much into these early reports, which are based on small number of patients, they suggest it will take time for the true profile of the variant to come into focus. But several note that while early discussions about previous variants of concern have hinged on trying to figure out whether they caused more severe disease with Omicron, the questions relate to whether it's associated with milder infections. So that came from that South African study. Then from the Jerusalem Post, Israel, Omicron appears more contagious, less dangerous than other variants. This story also coming out on Sunday, and this was new data published Saturday, suggests that the new coronavirus variant is more contagious but less dangerous than other variants, according to Professor Dror Mefarek, a senior physician at Hebrew University Medical Center. Hang on one second here. It's popping out all over the place here. We have to say this with a lot of caution, but if we look at the currently available information, there's reason to believe that the variant is spreading fast, but maybe is not so dangerous. So there you go. Again, they looked at South African data, which shows that 80% of hospital admissions in the previous 2 weeks were people below the age of 50, the vast majority whom did not require oxygen support. So that may be off the same study. I don't know. It seems like it doesn't. Maybe it may not be. I don't know if it's another study in South Africa.
Well, Dr. Coetzee and others, Dr. Coetzee being the one who discovered it in South Africa, and others have talked about how the next couple of weeks is going to be the tell. In other words, as the virus, as this variant spreads, the severity of it, will it change? Will the new the patients or the people who contract the virus over the next couple of weeks become seriously ill, any of them? And if so, what demographic do they fall in? And could it change based on where they are in the world? You know, there was talk about South Africa and parts of that, in fact, that entire region, which areas had a low vaccination rate. But ultimately, the next couple of weeks will be a huge tell, as according to them, as to how severe and dangerous this new variant is.
And the other story came out that it may share some genetic material with the cold virus, which is why it spreads faster.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But if it spreads, Dr. Coetzee said it, as you just mentioned, she had said it early on. She said, if it's a much milder infection, but much more transmissible, you would actually want that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because then it would work its way through
anybody
remaining in the population.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're vaccinated and you can still pass it on, well, then it will work itself much quicker through the entire population and therefore give, more immunity from, well, if this doesn't do serious harm, you're not going to really do a lot of serious harm, and hopefully you get more immunity from serious harm if you get this. So,
right.
Interesting to see what's going on. I did notice that the panic seemed to subside over the weekend a little bit.
It did not carry the same way it did, in the previous week on social media. And, you know, that's, there was the story that came out that the FDA and the CDC want to work to get the approval for a whether it's the Omicron variant or Delta variant, I don't know which, but a variant-specific vaccination. They want to streamline that process. I think that's you're still looking at February, March, even if they streamline it.
And this doctor from Israel, this researcher said, we might need to accept that some people are going to get sick and treat them with the antiviral treatments that are about to become available, or the vaccines that might slightly be tweaked to be more effective.
Hmm.
He said, however, I'm not really sure that we will need to do it. The first option might be good enough. The doctor explained and expressed optimism that the protection granted by the booster will last for a long time. What I've seen from the studies is a booster really increases the antibody, and I think it will give long-lasting immunity.
Hmm.
So there you go.
All right.
And we're telling you the sources that we get it from and what the studies are from.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, did you see that Fauci seemed to be, well, I don't want to say backtracking, but we hope to take the travel bans off these African countries ASAP.
Yeah. That was something that clearly I think they look at and see what's going on the markets. The markets having a really rough week, but it wasn't just about that. I think the administration doesn't want to address the impact of the inflation on the market. And they don't want to address the impact of low jobs numbers on the market. So what do you do? Well, you blame everything on COVID. And then you just try and backtrack and hope that it will soothe the markets. But inflation's very real, especially given what Chairman Powell said last week. I think that's the lasting effect. I don't know. Well, that clearly wasn't priced in, that interest rates would go up faster than expected. But that's what he implied, Powell implied last week in the market. You know, that effect is still there, because then you look at the unemployment numbers, you look at inflation hitting, and if interest rates are on the rise, that's going to be a big hit on the economy. There's going to be, and inflation is going to be, I think, a hit, going to continue. It's not transitory any longer, and so it's going to be, this is going to be an impact that is felt well through November 8th of next year, and I think that's what they're trying to combat. I think, you know, change the tone a little bit, tone it down. Hopefully we can get back to normal very soon. And look, if it is the fact, or at least if the data shows that the Omicron variant is not more dangerous, just more contagious, and the symptoms remain mild, that is going to be a positive, because as the researchers have said and the doctors have said, again, this is according to them, then that would mean, that could easily mean the end to this pandemic, that the virus is weakening. And if that's the case, that's a positive.
We had talked last week about the stock market and when it really got hit, what, a little over a week ago, and was it down 900 points, I think it was, the one day we lost.
Yeah.
And we said, is it just the panic? The one day might have been the panic over what Omicron was, and uncertainty can kill the stock market, as we know. But then you and I started looking, okay, at the inflation numbers out there. So you look at inflation and how much it's increased. You've seen that the Fed came out when Powell came out and said, okay, we're going to have to, you know, we're going to have to accelerate raising interest rates, and we're going to have to stop with the stimulus, which is printing money to buy our own debt, that we're going to start all that. I think that had an effect on the stock market. By the time you get to Friday then, and the job numbers are less than half than what is expected to be, whether, and when you look at the Omicron and what we know so far, where now we're almost 3 weeks into it, and it seems like the consensus, the early consensus, is it's a milder form. I think the stock market's still going to have trouble with the fact that inflation is coming. The job numbers aren't there. I'll throw another thing into it. You know, housing is a big driver of the economy. And it last weekend or early last week, where it was announced that Biden was going to put double the tariffs on lumber coming in from Canada, which, again, that's to help the American lumber industry, but it hurts the American housing industry. Mm-hmm. Tariffs always do that, whether Trump put them in or Biden put them in.
Right.
It helps others, and it helps some. It helps a few to hurt a lot of others. And so we've never been fans of tariffs, unless they are used against a country that is using unfair trade practices. That would be the exception, which is when Trump used them with China. But we disagreed with it when Trump went after Europe and Canada. That's not the problem that we have with our economy, and will not be for the foreseeable future, or even Mexico throwing that in there. But you double and you make already an increasing cost of building homes in this country even more expensive while inflation is going up, which means fewer people will be able to afford a mortgage, because homes are going up so quickly and the home prices are going up so quickly. Interest rates could be going up very quickly. Then we talk about the drain on the economy if we do hit in a couple of years $1 trillion a year instead of $250 billion a year that we have to pay on the debt just in interest alone, four times the amount. We think that's been lowballed. We believe that if you go back to what we were paying in treasury bonds and treasury bills back on an average year when we weren't manipulating as much as we are in the Fed with the stimulus and buying our own debt, that if you ever got back to what was normal, 4%, 5%, 6% for a 6-month treasury bill, my God, you may have $2 trillion of interest that has to be paid every single year just on the debt. Well, we run into problems. And if you're somebody who's investing in the stock market, that has to be something that you're looking at right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually look at it and say, okay, right now, what we know early on about COVID, COVID's not the problem anymore.
No. No, it's this, it really is the fundamentals and with the economy, but especially when you look at, you know, what Powell said last week, that's going to be the so-called perfect storm. And in 22, when they're trying to get members of Congress reelected, and it's going to continue. And the problem is that, I guess my question would be, how much can the American public, the consuming public, withstand the inflation fatigue? Because it's one thing to see it and go through a period of it, but to see it consistently and have to deal with it every single day. I just, you know, when they said at first transitory, oh, sure, by spring of next year, sure, we expect everything. Actually, in the beginning, they were saying, oh, no, by the end of the year, by fall of 22, and nobody's looking for that to happen.
Yes, to quote our friend Richard Rosso, permatory.
Yeah, exactly. It's permatory.
I communicated with him over the weekend. I said, by the way, we credit you, but that's
right.
Now become part of the show.
Well, that's
permatory,
it.
Not
right.
Transitory.
Yeah. And you know, but that has a compounding effect when every single day you're going and people ultimately make the adjustment by doing what? They buy less. They have to make choices for their families. But that fatigue is very real, and they're looking for relief, real relief. And it's not coming anytime soon. Well,
no.
You know, that's where you get to it. It really isn't COVID, because I really do believe a lot of people look at this OSHA mandate and see that it likely won't withstand the courts, that it just won't. So I don't know that there's a lot of fear with that OSHA mandate right now. And politically, it was damaging enough, the fact that they put it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the long-lasting effects of inflation are very real, and they're not going away.
866-90-RED-EYE.
This is the Marketplace Minute. I'm Justin Ho. The stock market ended a volatile week down. The Dow dropped 0.2%. The S&P gave up over 0.8%, and the NASDAQ lost just shy of 2%. The economy added 210,000 jobs last month, according to the Labor Department. That's far less than economists had predicted. On the other hand, the unemployment rate fell. More people joined the labor force. Average pay rose. The unemployment rate is still higher than it was before the pandemic. One industry with lots of job growth last month was transportation and warehousing. That's thanks in large part to delivery companies, which have been hiring a lot of seasonal drivers ahead of the holidays. And the outdoor retailer Sportsman's Warehouse says it's called off a merger with the owner of Bass Pro Shops. Sportsman's Warehouse says both parties didn't think they could get clearance for the merger from the Federal Trade Commission. I'm Justin Ho with the Marketplace Minute.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Now, I was wondering about this scenario over the weekend.
Hmm.
If this variant is extremely, extremely mild, but extremely contagious. And the fact, whether you're vaccinated or not, it's still going to run through the population. Well, this means there's a possibility that cases go back up and we have more cases than we did even a year ago.
Yeah.
That it skyrockets through the roof.
Sure.
And even though you have very few people dying from it, what governments will say, all right, it's time to lock down completely again?
Well, no, you make a good point, because we are seeing, and they saw this in South Africa, even with people who were vaccinated and had had COVID before, they were still getting reinfection. And again, symptoms were mild, but if you got a spike in cases, will local and state governments decide they need to shut things down again? Mm-hmm. Here's your forecast.
An area of severe thunderstorms moving through this morning. In Arkansas, through the Ohio and Tennessee valleys, southern Illinois, and western Kentucky. These storms will be moving to the east throughout the morning, and with them frequent lightning, high winds, and potential for a few tornadoes. Plus, with the heavy amount of rain, we could see some areas of flash flooding. Rain is expected from this system today from Maine into eastern Texas. Now, out ahead of this storm, the temperatures will be 10 to 20 degrees above average over parts of the East Coast today. Meantime, temperatures are falling with heavy snow and high winds for the upper Great Lakes into Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Michigan. Fargo and Grand Forks are under a blizzard warning. Winds could be gusting as high as 50 miles an hour there, and of course, with the snow, whiteout conditions. Mountainous areas of Idaho and Montana are set to pick up several inches of snow today. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Your forecast is brought to you by Low Viscosity Kendall Super DFE. With increased protection and fuel savings, low viscosity leads to victory. Kendall Motor Oil. You get out what you put in.
If you listen 25 hours a week, you might catch some holiday cheer. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Of course, we've had some discussion on inflation. Let's go to Kristen in Richmond, Virginia. Kristen, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to put this a little bit more in a soundbite and think about inflation. I think it's really important to put it in a little longer term context. And we've had three waves of deflationary pressure on the United States. And my conclusion is we've reached a point where there's no other ways for the government to do it. And so let me step back. In 1967, we had the Bretton Woods Act, which basically broke the buck on the gold standard, right? That allowed us to print more money. So then what happened? Inflation started getting very high. And what did we do? Then we reached a deal with OPEC in order to buy oil from them. We required them to sell all the oil in dollars. So that stopped up a bunch of the dollars going through the world. And then after we had all the money going through the world and the dollar was strong, we then imported deflation from China by buying cheaper goods. So the point is when you think about this in the larger context, there is no other way there's no other levers for the government to push to reduce inflation. So I love your permatory term. I think it's really applicable. We're just going to have to tighten our belts and try to be more productive as a percent of GDP, because if you look at what we've done in the past, those levers just aren't available anymore.
Well, it's, you know, you look at the it really, inflation is a constant. It is going to be a constant. The question is the rate of inflation. And what we're, you know, what we talk about with the current rate of inflation, we're looking at record numbers. And that's something that you're not going to roll back. At least it's not going to roll back. There's not going to be deflation unless we see a great recession or a great depression. You saw those periods, really 2007 to 2009, but going back to 1930 to 33, those are two recent periods of deflation, but not for good reasons. And so inflation is kind of a given. The question is the rate of inflation and what's causing this spike in inflation. So if, you know, as Richard put it, the permatory, it's not transitory. It's going to be here. And it's, you know, you hope to slow the rate of inflation. And I don't see that happening over the next 12 to 14 months.
Yeah. I mean, when you bring up the, you know, deflationary pressures, which can always happen, but we really don't ever enter, except really in major recessions or depressions, we don't enter problems with deflation. There may be deflationary pressures, but where the economy is actually in, you know, deflation, you don't, you know, where we're paying, you know, we talked about it a couple of years ago, will we be paying negative interest rates? That really isn't happening. You know, it's really a problem. To me, the long-term problem is always not just inflation, because you're always going to have inflation. That seems to be a constant, but it's the level of inflation.
And also the fact that depending on who measures it, between 20 and 30% increased dollars in circulation over the past 12 to 18 months than we've had before. And
yeah,
so
right.
That's
yeah.
also
yeah.
a persistent.
Yeah.
No, it's a huge problem.
Right. No, because that's the devaluation of the dollar. You're not printing the money for the right reason, which would be to represent the direct, in fact, a related expansion in wealth. That's what you want. If there is to represent that expansion in wealth, then, okay, that's why there would be more dollars in circulation. Instead, it was printing money to hand it out. And if you're doing that, then idea is that the devaluation of the dollar, of course, that means your dollar has less buying power than it did before.
Let me ask this question here because I've never heard an answer from actually the Fed on this. The Fed's buying its own debt. Why? Because they can't. Because there are people that will buy the U.S. debt, but not at the interest rate that they're setting. Go ahead.
I don't believe that to be the case at all, because if you look at Germany, their effective interest rates are still slightly negative, and others in the world. So there's always going to be demand. I mean, we think it's crazy that the 10-year note is at 1.5, 1.6%, but every time it bumps up, it starts to go back down because the demand all over the world for something that's positive with, the backing of the federal government. So that seems to be keeping the interest rates down. And to your point about the interest rate on the debt.
Well, then, very, very quickly here. Why? What's the reason from the Fed why are they buying the debt as much as they have?
To print money.
To what?
To print money. You put money in the circulation. You don't buy debt. You sell securities when you want to sop up money, and then you buy it back when you want to increase the monetary supply. So. Mm-hmm. Them buying back the debt enables the Fed and to print money. So it's an elastic relationship.
Yeah. Right. Stimulus, but what's their reason for doing it? What is the positive in doing it from their point of view?
Propping up the banks. I mean, go back to when it started in the crisis, right? Where they started buying back all the assets that were on the bank's balance sheet to make it.
So the problem. So the problem that they caused, they're attempting to alleviate.
Yes. They wanted to back the banks and keep them stable, and so they started buying back the debt that they had because. You know, if you keep in mind, remember in Lehman, you know, the banks were over 30-1, Bear Stearns over 30-1 leverage. And now we're at in a normal rate, it would be in the teens. But they got over leveraged, so they had to buy back mortgage-backed securities and the Treasury in order to stabilize the banks and make them whole.
Yeah, we talked about that extensively over the years, Kristen. If you take Fannie and Freddie out of the equation and make it an organic borrower lender scenario, that housing bubble wouldn't have happened. And we go back to the September 30th, 1999 article in the New York Times that warned of what would happen if this plan were implemented, and that's exactly what happened. And we saw the subprime lending debacle. And by the way, they're still engaging in that. And Fannie and Freddie are still extremely active. The paper may be a bit different for now in terms of good paper versus bad paper, but they wanted you to believe that, oh, just a little bit of bad paper is not going to be a problem. Well, anytime the government intervenes and believes they can fix the problem, and that's exactly what happened, is that Fannie and Freddie, without Fannie and Freddie in that equation, then you would have had borrowers, qualifying lenders, and lenders would, or lenders rather, qualifying borrowers, and borrowers would not have had the money they had. When they went shopping in the streets of America for homes, they had way too much money that they didn't qualify for, except for the backing of the U.S. government and regulations there. Thank you so much. We appreciate it, Kristen. But yeah, it's, you're not going to see deflation until you hit a period like we hit in the recession, or going back to the Great Depression.
Or not even deflation, but deflationary pressure, which
yeah.
Which I don't, she doesn't see, and I don't see it.
No.
I guess the only thing that you could say is
deflation is transitory. If you want to talk about something that's transitory,
well, the only thing I can think, if you're talking about deflationary deflationary pressure. I mean, the whole deflation that you're, you know, it's negative interest rates, stuff like that would be permatory. Oh God. People go like, what the hell are you guys talking about? Where are these words coming from? But deflationary pressure would be economically deflationary pressure if the Fed actually stopped the stimulus. Now, they say they're going to. But when they stop it at that point, well, then you're not increasing inflationary pressure. So that would be technically decreasing it, especially if interest rates started going up.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, if you wanted to get into the
technical
aspect of it. But the market pressures, you know, I mean, that's what we had in the recession and the Great Depression, of course. And our production as a nation slowed, especially in the Great Depression.
I just like when she was talking about, you know, buying mortgage-backed securities.
Oh my gosh!
In the time of where mortgage-backed securities were completely worthless,
right?
Or not completely worthless, well, but they weren't worth the value that they were.
Well, because they had a rating only because they were backed by the U.S. government. Yep. These government-sponsored entities, Fannie and Freddie, if they didn't exist, the rating on those would not be there. It wouldn't have. I mean, you.
No, I agree with you.
We've said it a million times. It was like, you know, giving a bunch of college kids $5,000 each and say, hey, go to Vegas. And if you win money, you get to keep it. If you lose money, we'll give you your money back to you. We're going to guarantee you the win. And you can't do that on a global basis. They thought they could. But in September of 2003, then Treasury Secretary Snow was saying Fannie and Freddie cannot stand. Fannie, he was testifying, actually, on Capitol Hill. But Barney Frank and the other Democrats said, no, the problem is we're not doing enough. Believing that if they increase the numbers, that the ratio of good paper versus bad paper would increase to the effect that it would never be a problem. And that's what they thought. Or they wanted others to believe. But that's like saying, well, you only have one hole in your tire. The rest of the tire is fine, except for this small part of it that's leaking air. You can't go on like that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Thank you.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, this is an interesting story. Pharmacy retail giant Walgreens punched back at AOC last week after the far-left lawmaker dismissed rampant theft happening in retail stores nationwide. This is from TheBlaze.com. During an interview with The Washington Times, AOC downplayed the growing problem of smash-and-grab thefts and organized retail crime. Quote, "A lot of these allegations of organized retail theft are not actually panning out. I believe it's a Walgreens in California cited it, but the data didn't back it up."
Really?
However, a recent New York Times story on the growing problem of retail theft directly contradicts what AOC said. Theft is an ever-present issue for retailers. As much as $68.9 billion in products were stolen from retailers in 2019, according to one industry group, and it's become more visible, brazen, and violent in recent months, forcing an industry already buffeted by pandemic lockdowns and fights over mask requirements to deal with the new problem. The level of violence has taken it to a whole new level, said the president of the California Retailers Association. No one has ever seen this before. The New York Times attributed the surge in theft to online marketplaces. No, it's COVID, which makes it easy to sell stolen goods. A rampant violence of the summer of 2020 that followed the murder of George Floyd and poor enforcement of existing laws.
Right.
Yeah, that got a lot of coverage from conservative media that the New York Times is admitting that the violence and not recognizing the violence and letting the violence and the looting go helped to encourage criminals to continue doing it,
yeah,
especially in cities where they know,
yep,
they're not going to find much response.
Exactly. They know how to play this. Yep. And by the way, companies like Walgreens have hired their own investigators. They're spending a ton of money on this to try and find out what's behind it. I mean, they're not acting as the police would act because they don't have that kind of authority. But they're basically trying to gather what is going on with their merchandise that, you know, once it's taken from the store.
Politicians, retail organizations, and even Walgreens responded to AOC. Walgreens told the Washington Times that contrary to what Ocasio-Cortez said, organized retail crime is one of the top challenges facing the retail giant. In fact, the problem has evolved beyond shoplifting and petty theft to the sale of stolen and counterfeit goods online, evidence of organized retail theft.
Right.
They also said it's been such a problem that they've had to close stores in San Francisco that are now 40 times greater.
Wow.
Of getting things stolen than before.
Wow.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.